Hi, everybody. This is Kenny Pick, and thanks for listening to the Indie Media Weekly Thanksgiving Food Spectacular. Hopefully, you'll come away with some fun ideas to make your holiday a little bit more festive and your day a little less stressful. So let's get right to it. On the line with me right now, my co-host from Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick. It's the one, the only Rain from Four Freedoms Blog in Washington, D.C. Hello, Rain.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Hi. To you. And close proximity to you, I believe in the upstairs, it's Bobber in D.C.
Greetings and salutations.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining us. And last but not, definitely not least, somebody I love talking about food with, especially around the holidays, our good friend Janet Lee from Southern Progressive Revival. Hi, Janet.
Well, hello, everybody, and happy holidays.
Yeah, and I was screwed up, but you're in Lake of the Ozarks?
Yeah, Lake of the Ozarks or Camdenton, Missouri.
Missouri. Excellent.
Try to say it.
Excellent.
Get the raw out.
I like saying Missouri. I like that. So
that's what they all say down here, but
yeah. So all right, so we mentioned previously on Indie Media Weekly on the various programs here, I was looking for a good Thanksgiving podcast and I couldn't find one. It was either all about turkey, a little bit about side dishes, a little bit about this, a little bit about that, but not really anything that was all encompassing, and I thought it would be fun for us to just do that ourselves. So I think a good place to start with all of this for anybody out there who's planning a dinner of their own or wants to do it, you know, next year or for, you know, any other holiday other than Thanksgiving. You know, there's a lot of side dishes and prep work that you can do for any big meal that, you know, also is done on Thanksgiving. So, Janet, this was your idea to bring up shopping. So what are some good shopping tips for a big meal that you can provide?
All righty. I love this. This is my favorite part because I figure if I don't do this right, then the whole holiday weekend is kind of, I get off kilter.
Yeah.
So starting in September or October, I hit Dollar General and I buy like the cheaper foods that it doesn't really matter if you have a brand name or not.
Yeah.
So I'll look for beans or some corn that I'm going to add into stuff. Then because canned goods you can keep for a long time.
Oh,
it's not
yeah.
that big of a deal. So then if I want specific brand names, then I start looking around at other stores and I make sure that I keep a list. You have to have a list too and stay organized. So when I'm doing holiday shopping, that's all I do is just the holiday shopping so I can have my list. Then I'll look for other stuff at other stores because some stores have really good canned asparagus if you're not going to do the fresh fruits and vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
Then 2 days out, somewhere in there or three, I go in and get the things that have to be bought then, such as my meats because I get I've had a heart attack and I've got vegetarians in my family. We have practicing Jewish members in our family. So I get them, and we're Swedish, Scandinavian. So I get my meats, turkey breast, chicken, and fish, and then the obligatory herring, mm-hmm. and the breads, and then the fresh fruits and veggies.
Yeah, so this is good. You do your shopping in waves. I kind of do that on a more condensed level. My pantry with canned goods, I keep it rotated out. I always have, you know, all the staples on hand, all my beans for chili, all my green beans, corn, peas, you know, other stuff like that. So, but that's always good. And we do have a couple places around us that sell really cheap canned goods, like Save-A-Lot, and we have Aldi in our area, which is pretty cheap too. But
well,
yeah, that's smart.
But sometimes
though,
so. We'll have up to 18 people.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have a big group like that and then they're there all weekend, so you're talking breakfast, lunch, and dinner, so you've got to plan ahead for our family. You know, you've got to plan ahead for the whole weekend.
I'm thinking on the micro scale. So that's,
yeah.
Who does most of the shopping, or do you guys do your shopping together, Bob and Rain?
You take this one, dear.
I think Rain probably does most of the shopping, but, you know, it sort of depends on what we need and when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do, if I'm not doing something, doing errands, I'll stop by the store and pick stuff up. So it kind of gives and takes. If we're going to someplace like Costco, which is another good place to go if you're having to feed a lot of people or have, large quantities of stuff, you know, you can get it. Large quantities there for a lot cheaper than you can anywhere else. But if it's just for two of you, that's usually too much. So that's how we usually approach it.
I'm not nearly as organized as Janet.
Well, now I'll give everybody a little tip because I get really like crazy detail oriented when it comes to planning meals like this. So what I do is for the starting point of the list, just to make sure I don't forget anything, is I write down every dish that I'm making, mm-hmm. and then I write all the ingredients I need for each dish, you know, because a lot of them will use the same thing, onions, celery, whatever. And then that'll kind of, you know, so then once I have that master list of all the things that I'm making, then I take the items from that list and I put it on the shopping list. And, you know, and I can kind of gauge how much I'll need, you know, like if I need, you know, again, I went and I bought like 4 big onions the other day for, you know, what I'm doing because I'm going to need a crap load of onion. Let me ask
you something, Ken and Jan. Janet, you have big Thanksgivings. How big are yours, Ken?
Mine are for about 7 people over 2 days.
Right. See, the reason why I bring this up, and I think this is an interesting kind of compare and contrast. I used to have those big Thanksgivings where we had 10, 12, you know, big Thanksgivings. Mm-hmm. And what Janet just mentioned is really smart. I don't have to tell you that, my dear.
Thank you.
But, you know, since Bob and I have been together and since I have left New York, we have much smaller Thanksgivings. This afternoon, we're going to be going to a Friendsgiving because all of our friends are going to be out of town and going to their big family things.
Yeah.
So what's happened over the past 5-10 years is that we don't have to plan on such a big scale because mm-hmm. usually it's maybe 2-3, just a few of us. And so what we've kind of taken to doing, and we don't like to travel on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So what we've taken to doing in the past is either spend it. Well, what we're doing again this year, and we've done it before, is we've put out on Facebook that our door is just open.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. I'm making a 15-pound turkey, and you know, I have my basic kind of Thanksgiving menu. It's, to me, Thanksgiving is one of those things where this is where I like it to be really traditional.
Yes.
You know, and when I say traditional, thank you for reminding me. I've got to get herring because I'm German.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
You know, things like your root vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
I guess getting to the point, when it comes to shopping, we kind of don't really have a list that we have to make.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff we have, and there's staples that we know we can go to. And we're also fortunate enough to live in an area where within a mile and a half is we have about 5 different supermarkets.
Yeah.
So it's a little easier than, say, somebody who lives in a more rural area or maybe, you know.
Because I have to drive 5 to 7 miles to get food. So
that's the way it used to be for me when I was in upstate New York. And it just brought back some memories of that.
Yeah.
You know, and cooking things the night before.
Yeah. Right. And let's get to turkey because you brought up the weight of your turkey. And that's one thing for planning, too, is you should count on a pound of turkey for every guest you have. So that's the one helpful tip that I always, I always overshoot, but you know, I like having leftovers and I like being able to make like turkey chili after the fact, have it for sandwiches and everything else. But we're going to talk turkey right now. Let's move on to that part. If you're like me and most, folks in this country, you buy frozen turkeys, you know, because I know the pros and the cons of the, you know, the farm raised turkey and everything and whatever. We're not going to get into that. But turkey right now in my area, it's 77 cents a pound. So I actually bought two turkeys this year. I might buy a third one because we have a chest freezer. And there's a reason why I want to do this is because I was listening to a chef who cooks, you know, used to cook tons of turkeys all the time. And he was like, you want to figure out how to make the perfect turkey? This is the perfect time to fill your freezer, buy turkeys, and you can experiment for other holidays. You can or just, hey, once a month, make a turkey. And you have all this wonderful meat that you can use for whatever you want. And, you know, you can experiment and have fun with it. But the one important thing, though, about the frozen turkeys is give them so much time to thaw. Because those things are so freaking, I mean, they're like a frozen rock. And they need so much thawing time. And if you don't have a perfectly thawed turkey on Thanksgiving morning or, you know, whenever you're putting it in the oven, your risk of having raw meat and uneven cooking, it just goes through the roof. another helpful tip, something that I have not always done and I'm going to try and do for 4 hours this year, is I'm going to take the turkey out of the fridge 4 hours before it goes into the oven and let it get as close to room temperature as I can. And I've heard this repeated by many, many people that, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, getting sick from that. That's, you know, that's fine. 4 hours isn't enough time for a cold turkey to start accumulating a ton of bacteria. One other thing about bacteria with turkeys, too, something I used to do and I stopped is don't rinse your turkeys. I know a lot of people say you should rinse them, but if you cook it properly and, you know, at the right temperature and everything, I think 165 is about the temperature you want to shoot for. You can go 175 if you want to go stick with the FDA, but then you'll get a dry turkey. But the chances of spreading bacteria by rinsing a turkey are greater than actually the bacteria surviving the heat of the oven. Because if you're rinsing it in the sink and, you know, I mean, you might as well just Clorox down the whole kitchen once you're done. So
that's other thing regarding temperature. Mm-hmm. And make sure, because we've been struggling with this the past few months, make sure that your oven is the right temperature.
Yeah.
Right. We have a digital display, you know, one of those digital display temperature things on our oven, and I think it was accurate when we first got it, but it seems to have gotten further and further out of calibration.
Okay.
So we actually bought like a thermometer that you put inside your oven,
mm-hmm.
and sort of recalibrated it with that, but that's something that's pretty important,
especially if you're doing an important dinner, you know. I mean, it's one thing if you're making a meat pie or something,
sure.
But just, that's another little tip.
Yeah, that's a good one. I never would have thought of that. Our oven is newer, and so far it doesn't seem to be having any issues. But I've known plenty of people that have that little clip-on thermometer right there on the oven rack. So, that's a very good tip. That's a very good tip. Go ahead, Janet.
I was just going to say one quick thing. Everybody, all the kids, my kids, the group, always have Thanksgiving with, you know, the other side of their family and stuff. So by the time I get them on my Thanksgiving weekend, they're pretty sick of turkey. So what I do is get a good sized chicken breast, just the breast,
mm-hmm.
and then I put it in the crock pot because I've had a heart attack. And the only reason they want turkey is for sandwiches.
Sure.
So because I cook other meats that for the meal.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it in a crock pot after it's, of course, thawed well. And then I just put in a cup of water and a bunch of spices. And then I put it on for 4 hours, and it is the best tasting meat ever.
Oh, I live and die by my crock pot. I throw meat in there just completely frozen. You know, I don't even care when it goes in the crock pot because it's such a slow cook that I've never had the consistency or texture of the meat suffer from that. So Exactly. That's great. And another thing, you know, well, actually, remind me about vegetarianism when we get to sides. But let's talk about how we make our turkeys. So who wants to take this one first? Rain, why don't you talk about how you do your turkey?
Well, I used to rinse it, but I'm not going to do that anymore.
There you go.
I do it fairly traditional. I don't put the stuffing in, especially if it's a large turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked the stuffing in, but if it's a large turkey, it takes a long time to cook.
Yeah.
So what I like to do, and I like to do this when I'm roasting chickens too, you know, you got your three core veggies. You got your carrots, your celery, and your onion.
Yes.
I put those inside the cavity, and then whatever kind of spices or, you know, herbs might be still left around my yard, I'll put some thyme in there or maybe some sage.
Oh, that's great.
And just put all the seasonings in the cavity of the turkey. And then just put, you know, on top of the turkey, that's just a, for me, it's just a very basic butter, salt, pepper, maybe some garlic, you know, powder.
Mm-hmm.
And I just let all of those juices from the carrot, celery, and onions just, it melts with the turkey and makes just an amazing gravy. So it's really, I'm really basic with it. In years past, I've done brining.
Yeah.
And it's worked. It works when you buy a good turkey as opposed to one of those, you know, birds that tell you it's 20% water.
Yeah.
Then I have found that the skin does disintegrate.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've heard is that the skin gets really kind of flabby and you have to let it. Well, and if you think about you know soaking in a bathtub, what happens to your skin after, you know, 30 minutes or an hour? What happens to a turkey that's dead?
Right.
But I've done it when, you know, buying
I brined it in the past by buying like what would be the equivalent of, say, a Giant's Nature's Organic or whatever.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, well, whatever, but it's a real it doesn't have the extra water in it.
Yes.
So when you brine it with that, and it does give an extra flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but basically I go kind of traditional and then I let, you know, the sides do their thing.
Yeah. So Janet, talk to us mm-hmm. about, how you prepare a turkey
and
cook it.
I do, if I'm going to do the crock pot, which is what I've been doing since everybody's kind of had getting sick of turkey by the time we get our get together for the mm-hmm. weekend. So I do use the crock pot pretty much for turkey. And if I do a whole turkey, a lot of times I use that brown paper bag because it seems like it keeps the moisture in a lot better.
Yeah, you know,
I put it in the,
I was just talking mm-hmm. to somebody. I was just talking to somebody about the brown paper bag the other day, but I didn't quite get it. But go ahead, tell folks about
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
you put it in there, your tin, and you get all your whatever you're going to put on there, like whatever you like, your whatever, your butter, your seasoning, mm-hmm. or whatever, and then you put the brown paper bag over it, and when it's done and you know it's done, then you just rip the top of the brown paper bag off and it's beautiful.
Huh.
It's the most beautiful and moist turkey ever.
And from my understanding,
and it doesn't burn in the oven?
Yeah, I was going to say the paper bag doesn't catch fire?
No.
Okay.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy at work about that. Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, so you're using a paper bag instead of foil because maybe it breathes a little better? You know, some of the moisture?
And I think it's the moisture in the brown paper bag because the moisture goes with, you know, into the brown paper bag and it stays in there. Where, you know, and it can kind of breathe. I don't know why, but I always think it tastes better. Hmm. You know, and it keeps its color and nothing gets burnt. With your foil, it doesn't really brown as well.
Right.
But it will with the paper bag. Of course, you can't have it clear up there touching the coils.
Sure.
And some people go ahead and moisten it a little bit before they put it in there. But, you know, it's always worked for me anyway. And I always, you know, you put it down as low as you can in the oven and you've got to take your other racks off. You can't
yeah.
do anything else in there if you have the brown paper bag method.
Interesting.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, Bob, have you before you met Rain, did you cook any turkeys on your own? Do you have any things that you like to do with them?
I have. It's been a long time, so I don't really know that I can add anything to what they've already said. I will say that in the past, I've had the deep fried turkey.
Yeah.
At a person's house, and yeah. that was actually pretty good. I was dubious. You know, I thought it was going to be greasy and like really hard on the outside, but it was actually quite good. You know, it's one of those things that people, you always hear the horror stories about people burning down the garage.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, make sure that sucker's away from the house.
Yeah. And you have to lower it in slowly. You can't just drop it in. You have to be careful with that. The other thing, getting away from turkey a little bit, and only partially, at my sister's one year, we had turducken.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know what it is, that's a deboned chicken stuffed inside a deboned duck stuffed inside a deboned turkey. And it's just this huge mass of solid meat. And, you know, there's all these spices and things that are sort of injected into it and between the layers. And it actually turned out really, really good. It's not something I would do on any kind of a regular basis, but I was glad I had the opportunity to try it.
Yeah, I would like to try both of those things. I've not tried either. So I'm too big of a chicken to deep fry a turkey. But because I know I'd hurt myself. So now for me, the turkey, I've been evolving my method on how to do turkeys, and I agree with no stuffing inside the turkey, because basically you're putting a huge blob of insulation in something that really needs as much airflow going through it as possible. Rain, I love the idea of putting your aromatics and your vegetables inside the cavity. I'm not going to do it this year. I'm going to try it without anything in the cavity except maybe a few garlic cloves. But what I'm going to do is I usually use a V-shaped rack inside my roasting pan. I'm going to do away with that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to do like a lattice work of carrots and celery in the bottom of the pan, and some chunky onions. And I'm just going to set it, you know, do those right there in the roasting pan, put the turkey on that little bed of vegetables, and see what that does. Before I even get to that point with it, though, I am a huge fan of, once the turkey's, you know, just right about before it's ready to go in, is I run my hand under the skin and I separate the skin from the body. In the past, I've put like rosemary skewers and bacon under the skin. That is a fantastic method. You can't go wrong if you can get some really good thick bacon. It's pretty much inedible after it's done cooking, unless you want to maybe fry it up separately. But most of the flavor's gone from it anyway. But this
sounds so good.
It really is. And I'll tell you what, when you put the bacon under the skin and it runs down, and it hits the dark meat of the legs, it almost tastes like ham by the dark meat. And because I'm not a huge fan of the dark meat, but when that bacon grease hits it, oh my God, it's so good. This is like a Martha Stewart thing that I did. There's another method I want to try eventually, but I'm not going to do this year. Martha Stewart there was a cheesecloth with herbs and butter put over the top for most of the baking time, and I guess that really seals in the moisture. But this time I'm kind of going with, you know, I saw a bunch of different videos with chefs making this, Gordon Ramsay being one. I love that maniac. I got some good unsalted butter from the West Side Market here in Cleveland. Got a bunch of parsley, and I'm going to grate up some garlic. And I'm just going to take that butter and I'm going to run it under the skin and on top of the skin. You know, all over, and that's how I'm going to prep it. And like I said, I'm not going to put any vegetables in it. Oh shoot, I forgot about this. I'm going to do a dry brine before that. So even before the night before, on Wednesday night, as early as I can, I'm going to take I've seen a few people do this. I've never brined a turkey, but I like the idea of a dry brine. Basically, it's a spice rub is what it is. And I think it's two parts salt to one part brown sugar, and then whatever seasonings you want. And you do it under the skin and on top of the skin. And I guess that salt and sugar will just start to kind of break down some of the meat, and then that flavor will penetrate down to the bone, is what I've heard.
So, and do you rinse that off before you cook it?
No.
Or do you cook it with the dry brine on it?
You can brush off some of the, if there's a lot of salt, deposited here and there, you can brush that off. I plan not to be too heavy-handed with it. So, if I see, I'll try and rub it in until it dissolves as much as I can. But if there is any major, clumps, I will brush them off, especially on the outside of it. So that's another reason why I'm doing the unsalted butter for when I do the butter under the skin and on top of the skin, because I'm already going to be adding a crap load of salt with that dry rub.
I was going to ask about that.
Yeah. So then I'm going to do the, so once my dry rub is in, the butter is in there. Like I said, I'm going to leave the cavity empty just to see, if I can increase the airflow. And Rain, another thing I used to do is I would take apples and lemons and put that in the cavity as well. So that's,
I have done that in the past.
Yeah. So.
Me too.
It adds nice. Yeah. I mean, that's the interesting thing. You don't have to stuff the cavity, because I think that the air is important, but there's so many things that you can do just to add like a little flavor, and it might not be to the breast meat. It does end up seeping kind of into the dark meat, which I'm a dark meat girl. Mm-hmm.
So I
love the dark meat
and all that. And if you use the pan drippings, all that flavor goes into the gravy too.
And if we get to gravy.
Oh, we will.
I got one more thing I wanted to add, because I did look it up to find out why the paper bag doesn't burn. And, they say that the bag only burns, a paper bag, at 451 degrees. And as long as you're not cooking your turkey at that degrees, your brown paper bag doesn't, and you moisten it a little bit, sprinkle it, it won't burn.
Ah, yes. Fahrenheit 451.
Yep.
Yeah.
I was going to say that.
And
wow.
They say to cook it on the middle rack, and I've always done mine on the bottom, but that's all right.
One other thing I was just going to toss in real quick about the stuffing inside the turkey. If you want, you could always put the stuffing in after everything's done. If you want to bring it to the table for a presentation, if you're one of those, if you bring it to the table uncarved.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. That's exactly. We don't have a big enough table for that, but yeah, I wholly endorse that. If you have a small kitchen too. Small kitchen, small dining room, whatever. If you don't want to bring the turkey, and I've heard a lot of people say, once the turkey's done, if you want to just swing it around, and show everybody and let them ooh and ah over it, take it back in the kitchen and then just start ripping it apart,
And so. Another thing, too, if you want to, for people that are watching salt intake, you can use, instead of butter, which has a lot of salt, unless you're using unsalted, you can use olive oil.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably will mix some olive oil with that unsalted butter, butter and olive oil together does something magic, and it's just so smooth once it's mixed together. It's great. But yeah, olive oil all the way. I brushing vegetables with that or meat, that's great. I never, the olive oil never makes it into the cupboard at our house. It's always on the little sideboard by the stove. Let's get to gravy before we get to our sides. So I kind of alluded. I do use pan drippings for my gravy, but this year I'm doing something a little bit different, because I'm all about doing as much stuff as you can before Thanksgiving Day, because once the turkey's in the oven, you can't do anything unless it's stovetop and microwave, crock pot,
Right.
So what I'm going to do is I use the giblets from the turkey. I pull out the neck, get the giblet bag out, and put that in a pot of chicken stock or water. And I will boil that for like a long time, like a couple hours at least, and make a really nice base for the gravy. And then I'm going to do that the night before. And then I'm going to let it sit. And then I'm going to scoop off all the fat that's separated. And then I have a nice foundation for my gravy for the next day. And what I'll do is I'll incorporate the pan drippings. But again, while the turkey is resting. That's another thing, too, is I plan on letting my turkey rest for at least an hour. I'm going to cover it tightly with foil, every kitchen towel I can find, and a big old bath blanket, bath towel. And I'm going to, you know, just insulate that sucker and let it sit and rest. Because from what I understand, resting time is almost as important as anything else. And you can pull it a little, you can pull it at like 160 degrees, maybe 150, you know, I wouldn't go dip down to 155, but, you know, just under 160. Because once you pull it from the oven, obviously, just like any big, you know, thing that you pull off the heat, it's going to keep cooking for a while.
Keep cooking, yeah.
Yeah, so.
And that's something else when you're, it took me a long time to learn this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to watch my grandmother cook and my mother cook, and the turkey would sit there, and I'd be like, but it's getting cold, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And once I started doing, cooking these dinners, I realized that that is important. But the other thing when it comes to time, if you're somebody like me who tends to stress out, once it kicked in my head that I can let that turkey sit there for an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Well, at that point now, you know, if you have corn, you can put the corn in the oven.
Yeah.
That's the time where you can start juggling around all the side dishes and get those in the oven so they can stay warm.
Exactly.
Like I said, it took me a long time to learn that. And I say that in case there are other people out there who do put themselves under too much stress sometimes. I realized, you know, it'll be okay.
Yeah.
That downtime for the turkey, the resting time, is a good time to get all that other stuff done.
Yeah, and if you wrap it up real good, and like I said, insulate it, you know, just use every kitchen towel you have, and then, you know, people might think it's weird that you're putting a beach blanket on it or something, but, you know, just anything to keep that heat in there, because if you keep that heat in there with no, you know, and don't leave it open to air, all that moisture is just going to be swirling around. It doesn't have any place to go. So where's it go? It goes into the meat. So it's going to be delicious. And yeah, you're right, Ryan. That's, you know, that was before I learned that. It was like mad dash. It's like, where do I put this stuff? There's no room in the oven. And it's like, you know what? Once that turkey is there, you got your entire oven free. None of the sides that I make take more than like 45 minutes. And they can pretty much all go in the oven at the same time. So, so sorry to go back to that's an important step that definitely needed to be addressed. But yeah, so like I said, you know, if you want to start your gravy the night before, that's always a good idea, is to, you know, just take care of those giblets. And if your cats will eat them once they're done boiling, then give them to the cats. Don't add any salt to it until after they're done reducing down, because you don't want to get
except the gizzards. You got to eat the gizzards.
Well,
you can't let your animal have a gizzard.
I had a feeling you were a gizzard gal.
I'll let the cats have any of that except the neck. And don't feed your cat, don't feed your animals the neck, because that's full of tiny little bones they can choke on. So you don't want to do that. You can pull some meat off of it and give it to them, but don't give it to them whole.
Yep,
my mother used to use all those inner things for the gravy. She'd boil them, and
that's what I do too.
And then strain it, and then use that as part of the gravy for flavor.
What I'll be doing that the night before, and then like I said, I'll let it cool down, skim the fat off the top, because that's really gross when you have gravy and then it starts to cool down and you get this big slick of grease on top. So if you have a fat separator, you can use a fat separator. I don't, so basically I just have to let it cool down, and then that yellow scum on top, you just scoop it right into the trash, or fry something in it. I don't know, or feed it to a cat. As long as you haven't added salt, feed it to a cat. You don't want to give your kitty salt. So I've got, you know, you have that great stock, like you said, like. I think we're all in agreement with the stock there. And then you save that for, again, you've got a wonderful start to your gravy, and then the next day you add your pan drippings. And that, this is the thing for me too, is like, I'm having a quandary about this, because I want to, I think I might take the turkey and transfer it into a different dish, like a glass baking dish, once it's done, because I want to deglaze the roasting dish and get all those nice little brown bits on the side, because that's so much flavor in the bottom of the pan. And I'm thinking, you know, deglazing it over two burners on the top of the stove.
I do that.
Yeah, and do you use like amazing. Do you use wine or chicken stock for that?
I actually use water.
Yeah,
I actually use water. I mean, you know, if it's not burnt,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll use turkey stock because you can get turkey stock nowadays, yeah. especially this time of year. But I generally use water because if you have the gizzards mm-hmm. and all, you know, the neck and all that stuff cooking, so you have a really, really like deep base for the gravy there.
Mm-hmm.
With all the seasonings, once again, that drip off, you don't really need, if it's got enough fat in it, the turkey itself.
Yeah.
You can use water. I don't think that the gravy suffers from it, but okay. I usually take it off and put it on the plate. And then I put that, you know, roaster right over the two burners. And I just scrape that stuff off.
Okay.
And cook it until the water is boiling. And if, you know, you can strain it into another pot and then just keep cooking, add your other, you know, your giblet juice.
Sure.
And then just put the flour in there. And boy, I can make like 2 gallons of gravy from a 15-pound turkey.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And you know, and that's great because you can freeze that gravy and use it for something yep. else, you know, use it for make a stew with it later too, you know, thin it out and make a little bit of make a turkey stew. So,
2 gallons is a lot for two people.
Turkey pot pies.
Turkey pot, yes. Exactly. There you go. But yes, that is a lot. So, okay. So, all right. I think we're, any other tips on gravy? Janet, are you not much of a gravy person or what?
No, I make gravy just pretty much like you do. And now I use very little of the pan drippings, because, you know, it's gotten to be, it's just too salty. If yeah. you're not used to eating salt anymore.
Yeah, that'll blow your head off.
Yeah, so I use the giblets and the water that the giblets were in, and then I cut all the meat into tiny little pieces and put that into there. Then I make my gravy, basic gravy, and then I do that the night before, and then the next day when we're just before we're getting ready to eat, then I warm that up and then put in my cornstarch or whatever mm-hmm. I'm going to use for the thickener.
It's interesting you say cornstarch because I was just going to say something about if you're cooking for somebody who's gluten-free and you want to watch out and make sure that they can eat as much stuff on the table as possible, chickpea flour is a great thickener for gravies. It doesn't have a strong taste at all, but it's of all the gluten-free flours, that one is my favorite for stuff like gravy and making a roux for you know, like mac and cheese or whatever, any kind of sauce. So, but I do like cornstarch, but I'll use that more for kind of Asian cooking because it seems sometimes it might make gravies a little too gelatinous for me. I like the smoother flour, you know, texture.
And so, chickpea is good in protein, too. High in protein.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, there we go. Turkey and gravy taken care of. And please feel free to contact me or anybody else on Facebook. Yeah, I'm easy to find. Kenny Pick, if you want any more details on how we're doing our turkeys or our gravy or anything like that. If you aren't friends with Rain, Bob, or Janet on Facebook, just find me, Kenny Pick, or find Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick, Indie Media Weekly, or Southern Progressive Revival, and we'll get back to you and give more details on how to do any of the stuff we talked about with our turkey and our gravy. But what's really important about Thanksgiving is all the side dishes, and that's what we're going to focus on when we come back after this break on our Thanksgiving Food Spectacular on Indie Media Weekly.
Hi, this is Tim Quarimal from The Tim Quarimal Show, and you are listening to IndieMediaWeekly.com. Extraterrestrial radio, all the power without the tower.
Listen to Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick live every Tuesday and Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern for 3 hours of news, opinion, and laughs. This is what comedian and talk show host John Fugelsang has to say about Turn Up the Night.
You guys really walk a good line of having it be really collegial and really having a show that, you know, blends the intelligence with the irreverence, which is the hardest balance to pull off.
Still not convinced you should listen to Turn Up the Night? Well, listen to what legendary writer, actor, and comedian Rick Overton has to say.
I just don't think we can use the mainstream news for much anymore. I'd much rather go to you than to CNN for anything. You know, I would trust what my friends have to say more.
Well, who can argue with that? Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick, live every Tuesday and Friday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Indie Media Weekly.
Indie Media Weekly Radio is proud to bring you the Thomas Jefferson Hour, a radio program that models civil discourse, critical thinking, and good citizenship. Join nationally acclaimed humanities scholar and award-winning first-person interpreter of Thomas Jefferson, Clay Jenkinson, for the Thomas Jefferson Hour, Tuesdays at 10 a.m., Sundays at 4 p.m. The Thomas Jefferson Hour on Indie Media Weekly Radio. Visit them at jeffersonhour.com.
Yeehaw! Sunday, Sunday, Sunday! Come on down to Southern Progressive Revival to hear the best and worst of Southern politics once again. We've got all brand new 2016 episodes for the low, low price of 100% free, and tons of extras, including guests, rants, and flustered hosts and co-hosts. Think your credit ain't good enough? We don't care. Think you don't have nothing to hear since you ain't from the South? Well, that ain't right. You reckon that Yankee Pick feller's got more class than us? Well, that might be true. But let's do this. Come listen to Southern Progressive Revival live every Sunday from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Indie Media Weekly, extraterrestrial radio, all the power without the tower. Come now, and we'll throw in a free Pine Tree air freshener. Wow!
Hi, this is Tom Schaefer from Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick. You're listening to Indie Media Weekly, extraterrestrial radio. All the power without the tower.
And I am back with our fun little Thanksgiving food chat here on Indie Media Weekly. Of course, joined by Rain and Bob in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're here in D.C. where all of the turkeys are.
All of them, yeah. So, and, of course, Janet Lee from Southern Progressive Revival in Missouri joining us. Welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me. This is fun.
It really is. So, okay, so we went through our shopping, our turkey, our gravy. Now we need to get to one of the most important things. Of course, Thanksgiving wouldn't be Thanksgiving without lots of magnificent filling side dishes. And, of course, the most aptly named side dish, stuffing, because I love stuffing myself with stuffing. Let's get started with that. I think we're all on board here that we don't stuff our turkeys. You know, it does make for a wonderful presentation, and you know, Bob had a great idea for that. You know, put your stuffing in after it's all cooked. But let's talk about how we make our stuffing. I think there's the Holy Trinity. I've heard it referred to for stuffing where you start, and that is celery, onion. And why am I forgetting the third one? I'm like Rick Perry.
red celery, onion, and green pepper.
Oh, now that one—that's new to me. That's new to me. But
we said the Holy Trinity. That's what we call it down here.
Oh, okay. So green pepper, I did not know that. So, onion and celery—it's got to, you know, starting that with, you know, I think we all probably saute our vegetables first. With, you know, some butter, olive oil, what have you. You get those nice and transparent. And I like to add carrots to mine because anything to get more color on a normally tan Thanksgiving table, if you think about it, so many of the side dishes and the turkey itself just kind of shades of tan, you know? And yeah. So, of course, you know, I like to, going back to Janet mentioning having lots of vegetarians in your family, I like to make everything except the turkey and the gravy vegetarian. Now, I have, in the past, I like to use pan drippings for my stuffing, But it's not necessary. There are plenty of ways to make a good flavorful stuffing. And again, you start with your sautéed vegetables at the beginning, and rosemary is a must for me in any stuffing. And again, in talking about adding more color, I love the idea of the green peppers. I'm not a huge fan of green peppers, but I've never had stuffing with green peppers, but I would love to try that. What I like to do is I don't know anybody else who's ever done this, but the bread for the stuffing is really all important to me. And this is one that I like to do, and I've done repeatedly, is find a marble rye, because you already right there, you're adding in, you know, that pumpernickel brown into it. So, you know, when you're talking, you've got your green from your celery, or like Janet has with the green peppers, the little orange bits from the carrots, and then you've got a two-tone bread that you're using for it. Really just has a nice little, you know, fall color pop on the table there. So that's what I like to do. Nothing too terribly special, just, you know, like I said, saute those vegetables, mix that in, you know, with a fair amount of butter with your dried up cubes of bread, and then pour in, a zipped up vegetable stock, and then pop that in the oven, and, you know, in a shallow dish, and you've got some fantastic stuffing. So
do you not use sage in yours?
If I have it, I do, but I don't normally. It's just usually rosemary, black pepper. And Rain, something that I love that you mentioned earlier when you were talking about the turkey, is you mentioned garlic powder. Lot of people turn their nose up to garlic powder, but one of my favorite things to have in the kitchen for cooking is garlic powder and onion powder. There's something magical about them that you can't get from actual, you know, onion, you know, fresh onion and fresh garlic. I agree with that.
That's to me, and it helps save time.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some people who they do have a lot of time. I technically have a lot of time, but it saves time. And there's nothing wrong with taking some shortcuts if the results are the same flavorfulness.
Yeah, and if you're not a big garlic fan, powder doesn't have the salt content, number one. And number two, the garlic powder isn't near as overpowering as fresh garlic or ground garlic.
Yeah,
and the other aspect too is if you need something that where the end result is sort of smooth and you don't want like chunks of onion or chunks of, you know, garlic in there, the powder just mixes right in nice and smooth, and you know you can taste it and can smell it, but you don't feel it.
And, right.
You know, and sometimes, you know, that's not a good thing, but in some cases that's exactly what you want.
Especially, for something like gravy is the perfect thing. Nobody wants to get a chunk of onion or a little bit of garlic in their gravy. And, you know, and I'll tell you what, garlic powder and onion powder is going to be present in just about every dish that I make. because
it is in mine, too.
Yeah.
You know, getting back to Janet brought up sage, and I take a shortcut with stuffing.
Yeah.
See, I'm like the sinner of this show.
No, that's great. But, I love shortcuts.
I really like cornbread stuffing.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was given a recipe a few years ago, and it's Stovetop actually makes a cornbread box stuffing. But here's the caveat. You can go out and get, and I'm German, so everything has meat. Mm-hmm. Always has. We'd had meat stuffing.
Yeah.
Honestly, yeah. I know that's weird, but we've had meat stuffing.
Oysters. My grandma used to put oysters in it.
There's oysters. Right, right. My grandmother's from northern Germany, so there was always fish in the house. One of our side dishes was smoked eel, but we'll get to that. But if you want to make a nice, simple, flavorful, and very different stuffing, you can buy the corn, you know, the cornbread stovetop, and then go out and get Jimmy Dean sage sausage.
Mm-hmm.
And grill that up in the pan. And if you want, you can add a little extra sage, but grill that up in the pan and then mix it right in with the cornbread stuffing. And it's out of this world.
Oh, that's
great. I mean, it's
great.
Something that you can just have as like a side dish, almost a meal days after.
Yeah. And I could imagine, you know, throwing some red pepper in there too would make that gorgeous looking too.
Yeah, you can you can flour it up as much as you want, but it's a really, and it tastes authentic. It doesn't taste boxed, you know. Or you can make your own cornbread, and then, you know, that's not a bad thing either.
Yeah.
I like cornbread stuffing because it adds a little sweetness
mm-hmm.
to all the savoriness that you get with the other dishes.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. I dig that. Suggestion. I like that. I think I'm gonna steal that idea for maybe I'll do that for Christmas. I like that. So, again, that's my vegetarian version of stuffing. Rain, you have your awesome cornbread stuffing. Janet, what? Now let's get to your stuffing that has green peppers. I've never heard of that before. I want to know more.
Well, I use the onion and I use celery. And I use peppers, and I use all different kinds now. I yellow, the red, yeah, the green, cut them up really small. Yep. And then I also like the cornbread or the rye bread. I've never tried the marble rye. I've used the just plain rye bread.
Yeah.
But otherwise, that's pretty much. Now, I can't have pork at my house for 'cause I have some Jewish family members.
Sure.
So there is no pork that comes in or touches anything. But that does sound good, Rain. And I can't eat pork anymore either, so.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. That sounds good, though, really. My mouth started watering.
What I really like is how you've, with all the things that you've gone through in the past year, how you've been able to flip things around that makes it a little bit more healthy than me.
Well, I had to. Yeah.
It's inspiring, though. It is inspiring.
Well, thank you. But then again, I have Jewish members, I have vegetarians, and meat eaters.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I have the chicken and fish, and then our side for later on and for the weekend is the turkey. So I make stuff to complement the fish and the chicken.
Very cool.
So,
another thing too is what I plan to do. Another time saver is I'll be making my vegetarian marble rye stuffing the night before, and putting it in the pan. So those get those flavors to marry a little bit more overnight, and then that's one less thing I have to worry about. And again, stuffing doesn't take long at all. You just want to get it nice and crisp on top. So that's one of the last things to go in. I'm not even going to worry about, I'll just take it straight from the fridge and throw it in the oven, and it's going to be done in, 30 minutes tops. Especially as hot as the oven's going to be at that point. So, I'll probably cut the heat down. I don't want to leave it as high as it was for the last hour of the turkey. All right. So those are some fun stuffing ideas. This one should be pretty easy. Mashed potatoes. This is probably the last thing that everybody makes is mashed potatoes, because the mashed potatoes do not retain heat, unless you have a nice little carafe or something like that to put them in,
or a crock pot.
If you make, there you go. Yeah,
put them in a crock pot. Put your baking powder in there, a little bit of margarine, and put your lid on and put it on low.
Baking powder. Oh, wow. You put baking powder.
Yeah, because it keeps it white, keeps your potatoes white.
Oh, interesting.
Otherwise, if you put them in the crock pot without putting that in there, then your potatoes turn gray.
Oh, okay. Nobody wants gray potatoes.
That's right.
Yeah, that's smart. I like that. All right, so I'll just blow through how I do my mashed potatoes, and we will all compare and contrast. I used to use Yukon Gold, but I'm obsessed with red potatoes now. There's so much flavor in those little suckers. I'll just peel them, cube them up. Don't cut them too small. There's no point in that because, you can really cook them thoroughly. I see a lot of people using ricers with potatoes now. I don't. I've got an old-fashioned potato masher. Hand potato masher. I like them a little lumpy, so I leave them a little lumpy. And I'll use butter, of course, a lot of it, and a little bit of milk, and a lot of sour cream. And And that's another thing too. Is like a lot of people, sour cream is one of those things that has saved me from so many things. I know we talked about shortcuts and substitutions and stuff like that, You know, if I didn't have milk for a recipe, I would just, you know, add sour cream and a little bit of water to something, and that's bailed me out many, many times. And it gives an extra richness to it. But yeah, I'll probably go ahead and hit those. I'll hit them with a heavy dose of black pepper, white pepper if I have it. Again, the garlic powder, the garlic salt. The garlic powder, the onion powder. Not a ton. Just hit them with a little dash. And then I'll put in a couple good pinches of dried parsley, because I love those little green flecks in there. And, you know, leave a little bit of those red skins on the potatoes, too, because the red skin potatoes are the least offensive skin to get in a mashed potato, because it's really thin, and, you know, it's not like a big, you know, russet hide in your mouth, if you get that. And then that's another nice little way. If you have some little red flecks in the potatoes with the parsley in there, adds more color to the table. Nice, you know, again, anything to get more color in the otherwise tan meal of Thanksgiving. So Ray and Bob, mashed potatoes. Do you both partake in the process?
Rain usually does the mashed potatoes. I do other types of potato dishes, but not really for Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I pride myself on my mashed potatoes. And depending on the mood, like if it's the red russet, I've been known to not peel them at all. We call them dirty mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
I boil them. Yeah, I cut them up small. I boil them. I put finely minced onion in the boil.
Yum.
And then I drain. Yeah, you know, it's, but I like it smooth. So we pull out our big old kitchen, you know, KitchenAid mixer.
Sure.
And the butter, the sour cream, it mixes it up with the onion and the potatoes, and that's pretty. You know, some salt, maybe some garlic powder.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
But
salt.
I like it super creamy, and but yeah, that's sour cream. Now, what's funny is that my mom is a traditionalist. My mom makes it with butter and milk. And when my sisters and I started taking over Thanksgiving dinners, we didn't know this for years, that we were both secretly putting sour cream in there, not telling our mom or the rest of the family.
Yeah.
It was only like, this is so funny. It was only like two, three years ago. We went up to my sister's and she's putting the sour cream and she looks over and she goes, "Don't tell anybody. Mom doesn't know. We've been doing this for years." And I was like, "Damn it, I've been doing that for years too."
That's
sour
great.
Sour cream is the thing when it comes to mashed potatoes for me.
It really is. So, Janet, are you? Tell us about your mashed potatoes.
Well, if we make mashed potatoes, and I've kind of gotten away from that because I have a 3-year-old granddaughter that loves sweet potatoes.
Yes.
So I bake sweet potatoes, and you have the sages and all those flavors, and then your sweet potatoes have that sweet taste to them.
Yeah.
And so we bake sweet potatoes more so than the mashed potatoes. We're not really big on mashed potatoes anymore.
Oh.
So
I'm so
but I mean I make them.
Yeah.
But not that much.
I'm so big on the mashed potatoes. But I'm glad you brought up sweet potatoes, because I do sweet and mashed potatoes. But Bob, were you going to jump in there?
I was just going to say that mashed potatoes are there for the gravy. I mean, that's a marriage made in heaven. I don't really like to put gravy on sweet potatoes, and I love sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, we had a fairly white, I mean, a very white bread kind of Thanksgiving. You know, it was just white mashed potatoes, green beans, carrots, turkey, gravy, stuffing.
Yeah.
But after I got older, and especially moving to the South, moving to Georgia, learn to appreciate a whole nother set of flavors and side dishes. So sweet potatoes is one of them, and I do love them either just glazed, or you know, with the marshmallows on top, or with the praline pecans on top. I'll eat them anyway you prepare them.
I am about to divulge my super top secret sweet potato recipe right now. I probably told this before, but it's a twist on my grandmother's sweet potatoes. My family all originally hailed from Kentucky, so everything that's on my menu, it's pretty much all the stuff I ate when I was a kid growing up. I haven't deviated from all the sides, Every once in a while, I'll add something new, but I do try and improve on all those old recipes. And again, anything to get a little bit more color on the table. But now this sweet potatoes, I've gone a step beyond with them. Is I get myself a glass loaf dish with a lid, and I cube up probably one really good size, and this is just for you know, like four people, so you can double it, triple it, quadruple it, whatever you want. But I will take one good size sweet potato. I'm not talking a big one, you know, like half the size of your head. peel that up, cube that up. Take half a butternut squash, peel that, cube that up. Get rid of your seeds, of course. And it's a little tough to peel a butternut squash, but you know, just do a little elbow grease, and you can get that hide off of there. Cube all that up. Mix it up in your glass dish. Put in a healthy amount of butter. Put in a fair amount of brown sugar, not a ton. And then comes the secret ingredient that makes it all magical and melt in your mouth and delicious before you put it in the oven. Coca-Cola. Put Coca-Cola in there about probably two-thirds the way up the dish, and the Coca-Cola and the butter and the brown sugar make an absolute delicious syrup on these things, and you can dress it up a little bit. Again, throw in a little bit of color, a flavor that goes really well. Is I like to mash up pistachios and put on top. You know, because then you get little, you know, bits of green in there and everything. And that looks really nice. You can do that. You can actually do that after you're done. You don't have to cook it with the pistachio. You can just get, you know, smash some up in your food processor or mortar and pestle or whatever, have it handy. And then once you put them in your serving dish, sprinkle that on top. It looks gorgeous. And yeah, and I'll tell you what, Coca-Cola, butter, brown sugar. And again, the combination of the sweet potatoes with the butternut squash. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
That sounds great. And see, but we bake potatoes with our Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have baked potatoes and the...
And the baked sweet potatoes?
Yams. Yeah, your sweet potatoes, yeah.
So,
but that sounds good.
Yeah, it's good. It's fun. And, you know, you kind of feel like a mad scientist when you do it. It's cool.
that's part of the fun of cooking, right?
Exactly. So, Rain, any sweet potato tips?
None that people really can add here. I mean, Bob, we usually do sweet potatoes, right?
We usually don't.
That's what I'm trying to remember, because I know one thing that I do is, and this is not sweet potatoes, this is another side dish. Is I make something called firehouse carrots.
Oh, that sounds fun.
And the reason why, it's a recipe that I learned from, my father was a volunteer fireman, so we used to have steak bakes and clam bakes, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And they always served these carrots, and I finally figured out the recipe. And excuse me. What it is you boil up your carrots. Once again, onions, get them boiled, get them nice and soft. Add butter and add brown sugar to the carrots. And so now you have something that's orange like a sweet potato.
Yeah.
And it's sweet like that, but you got that kind of root, you know, again, that root vegetable flavoring. So that's one of the things that I've done in the past when I find, okay, there's just too many dishes for the two of us,
yeah.
or for the four of us, or for the five of us. And it's, I like it. I think that Bob likes it.
Yeah, they're really good. People don't realize just how much sweetness there actually is in carrots.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived in Georgia, there was a, you know, back in the late 70s, early 80s, they had cafeterias, and which is not unlike the cafeteria you had in school, but you know, you go and you get a tray, you pick your dishes, and one of them was carrot souffle, which is you know, they had sweet potato souffle and they had carrot souffle, and the carrot souffle was delicious. You know, essentially, if you think of it as, you know, when you think of sweet potato souffle, it's sort of the same idea, except made with carrots. It's got some, you know, sugar added to it, and it's really, really good. So,
well, and that's great. You bring up, you know, people don't realize how sweet carrots actually are. I carrots have bailed me out from this is the thing. I don't like to add sugar to things when I cook. I want to try and have, you know, unless it's something like the sweet potatoes. But like the other day, I was making a pot of chili, and I was like, it really needs something sweet. So I got out my fine grater, and I just grated a whole carrot into it, a big-ass carrot, right? And grated it into my chili, let that break down a little bit, and that gave it the perfect amount of sweetness that I needed. And nobody would ever know that there was carrot in there.
Oh my God, a vegetable in my chili.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've also seen recipes of putting grated carrots into, you know, when you make homemade spaghetti sauce.
Yeah.
To give it some sweetness without adding actual sugar to it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, because I just grimace at the idea of adding a spoonful of sugar to anything, you know, unless it is something that requires brown sugar. But, like, you know, just throwing sugar in, no, I can't do it.
Yeah, I don't like cooking with sugar. I mean, he's the sweet tooth in the family.
Yeah.
I'm not a real, I'm a much more savory type person. So yeah, I don't like adding sugar. I mean, carrots, I really hadn't thought about grating that. See, I'm learning something today.
See?
I tend to add maybe some onions, really, really like grated onions where they're, because onions tend to add sweetness. People might not know this, especially if you have something like a Vidalia onion.
Exactly.
That's a really sweet onion.
Leeks.
Yeah. Leeks is, yes.
Shallots. Shallots are a really good one too. And shallots are very mild compared to like a Vidalia. Actually, that's one thing I forgot about my stuffing too, is there will be shallots in the stuffing as well. So I'll have regular onion and shallots. Love having those little guys around. Only around the holidays. I don't usually buy shallots any other time. All right. So where are we? We got through all of our potatoes. And I love this, the firehouse carrots. That sounds good. When you first said that, I was thinking, what are you? Is it carrots with jalapenos? That sounds good.
No, it's just named after a family memory, like one of the good ones. It's like, this is a good one. Let's call it firehouse carrots. My sisters now do it. I mean, so when you say that, I just want to go off on this a tiny bit. When you say that you cook the same things that you did growing up, I found that really comforting because, like I said earlier in the show, I like a traditional Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But what I do like is in my family, this new generation between my sisters and I, we're adding little bits to it, but still keeping the old traditions. And that's a nice thing. It's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why we do like the herring and some fish dishes. Excuse me, because we've always done fish when I was younger for this Christmas dinner. She had 7 different fishes. So,
yummy.
But you started with your lutefisk. You always had a little bit where that was ready to go. And herring. So now we do herring. We always make sure there's herring or some kind of cod at Thanksgiving to remind us that Christmas is coming.
Now, do you
nice.
Do like, is it like a pickled herring or how's it prepared?
No, we do the pickled. I do the pickle because I'm lazy.
Okay.
I just go to the store and I get the pickled. But the cods, you know, you'll bake and then you have your mustard sauce or your white sauce. Because I like a real mustardy mustard sauce.
Yeah.
But the kids, they prefer just the white sauce or plain.
Yeah.
My granddaughter likes it just plain.
Mm-hmm. The easiest thing. Oh, I will say, not easy to clean up if you aren't careful. The easiest thing to add a little bit of color to my plate: 2 vegetables, 1 canned, 1 fresh, and that is beets. I just get, you know, small whole beets in a can. You know, warm those up. Don't do anything fancy to them. Unless I'm doing Harvard beets. We have somebody who's coming who doesn't like Harvard beets. So I'm just doing straight up beets, which I'm kind of sad about because I make really wonderful, gorgeous, shiny Harvard beets in a nice little cornstarch sauce. And the Brussels sprouts, if anybody doesn't know how... If anybody doesn't like Brussels sprouts because they think they're bitter and you don't know this tip, this is something that I apparently had no clue about until about 5 years ago. After you're done cleaning up all your Brussels sprouts, get all the icky leaves off mm-hmm. of them and everything, and then, you know, trim the butt off a little bit.
Right.
Make an X-shaped cut almost halfway through each Brussels sprout, and when you boil them or steam them or whatever, that X-shaped cut is going to, all the bitterness just goes out, and you're left with a lovely, sweet little Brussels sprout. If you steam them too, you can get some of the best color on Brussels sprouts. Boiling is fine too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say another good thing to do with those with your leftover is I like to put them in a container and then put zesty Italian on them, marinate them overnight, and then they're a really good snack cold.
Huh. I've never had that.
Really good.
I have heard of a Brussels sprout slaw where you actually use the, you know, grate them up and use them fresh. So, you know, if you want to add something fresh to your plate and not cooked or steamed or anything like that, you know, a lot of people do that with, you know, all kinds of vegetables. I've heard of squash slaw, you know, so because when you grate when you grate stuff down, you know, not as hard to chew. And you know, so you can get some good fresh stuff on the table if you're. Again, want even brighter colors and a healthy option on the table. But, Rain, any other vegetables that make it to the Thanksgiving table?
Turnips.
Oh, turnips.
So you could see that I'm going with the theme of mashed foods.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. all right.
I this is something that's always been in our family, and I love turnips. I love mashed turnips, and a lot of people don't like them, or they can also be called what, rutabagas or something, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm talking about the big ones that are yellow, and I peel them and I boil them up. Same time I'm doing my mashed potatoes, mash them up. And with that, I add butter, again, some garlic or onion powder, and a little cream or milk.
Mm-hmm.
And it cuts the edge, and it just becomes, I love turnips.
Yeah.
I look forward to this time of year. And if we get invited out to dinner or a potluck thing, I'll usually bring turnips.
Oh, that's great. You know, my mom swears by neeps and tatties, which is the Irish name for mashed potatoes and turnips. Mm-hmm. And
my dad loved that.
Yeah. And we've made that a couple times.
With the leftovers.
What's that?
You know, with the leftovers, you can mix them.
Yeah.
And once again, just put gravy on them.
Yeah. And
I didn't know that's what that was called. That's really good to know.
Yeah. Neeps and tatties. That's the Irish name for it. And Susan always wants to make it. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to. So
you can also make Col Canon. That's the mashed potatoes with cabbage in it.
Yes. Yes. Col Canon. I made that for a Halloween party a few years ago. That was delicious. So. Lots of good Irish. Not lots of good Irish food. There's like five good Irish food recipes. So I'm Irish. I'm allowed to be an ignorant jerk like that. So
the other thing that's usually on our table is, and this is again my German thing, is I make canned pickled red cabbage.
Oh,
that and so that good. Adds a. Another flavor. When you brought up beets, I thought of red cabbage because we used to have pickled beets, and we have a lot of pickled foods too.
Yeah.
I love red cabbage. So that's something that can go with anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that adds like a nice red color. Go ahead. I'm
we
sorry.
Like baked asparagus, you know, where and you I slice love. It in the middle and you put a little bit of margarine in it and garlic and stuff like that and put it in foil and stick it in the oven.
We that have sounds really good.
Really good.
Now, you know, this is something we usually have steamed asparagus because I love asparagus. Bob loves asparagus. We used to have in the jar white asparagus, and it's soft and it's mushy and it's gross to a lot of people, but I love white asparagus.
I do too. I used to buy that fresh when I could. But right now we have 5 pounds of asparagus that somebody tricked Susan into buying the other day at the Westside Market. So, We have some blanching and freezing to do, but hopefully we'll bust some out and but yeah, maybe roast some in the oven. I think that sounds good. Again, another great way to get some color and freshness on the otherwise heavy Thanksgiving plate. And speaking of heavy, probably about the heaviest dish outside. It is the heaviest dish that I make, and it is. So many people hate this recipe, and I absolutely love it. Green bean casserole, everyone. And
and we have to have that. I'm sorry. We just
why would you want to do that to some perfectly good green beans?
Well, they're not perfectly good. They're in a can. So,
Okay. So that's why I like fresh or frozen vegetables. Yeah.
So, well, now this year I'm going to be doing, I did this once before, but I made green bean casserole cups. And before I used canned pastry, Pillsbury type thing, and pressed that into a muffin tin, and then filled that with the green bean, the green beans, the cream of mushroom soup, extra mushrooms. I always put extra mushrooms. I love sautéing my own mushrooms and adding it too, because the more mushrooms in anything, the better. I'll probably put mushrooms in my stuffing too. That's the one thing I forgot about my stuffing.
Love mushrooms.
Oh yeah, yeah. And so saute extra mushrooms, olive oil, butter, whatever, and then mix that in, zip it up, lots of spices, again, garlic powder, garlic salt, black pepper, parsley, whatever. Put that, mix all that in, and then I filled those little pastry cups and put some shredded cheese on top just to make it even a little heavier. And
you don't put the crispy canned onions?
Oh, yeah, I do that too. Yeah.
I have tried that. It's just not my thing.
Yeah, I love it. But this year, my mom sent me a new recipe. She always made fun of me about it too, but now she's kind of on board with it. But she sent me a new one. You know those really fast videos of people making food that they share on Facebook and everything? Well, there's a new one where you actually make the crackers. It's like crackers and I think, is it egg or butter or something like that? And then
butter.
And then I think you actually mix some of the mushroom soup in with the crackers too and
squish it.
Yeah, squish it in, and then you've got a crumble crust for your cups. So I'm gonna try it that way this year. I see that we have the 50-50 split on green bean casserole here, and that's okay. It's a very divisive issue. It's a very divisive issue. So so
I'm interested in salads. What kind of salads does everybody have?
None.
Really?
No, I don't do salads on Thanksgiving.
Well, we have vegetarian, so I also do like some kind of noodle salad.
Yeah.
And then, of course, rice.
Yeah.
Salad.
Oh, rice salad. That's interesting.
Salad, if there's time. I like, a garden salad with a nice, robust lettuce and, but the natural fiber, as it were.
Yeah, I do not do salads. I barely do appetizers because I'm the guy who, if you don't have a second plate, you're going to hurt my feelings. So don't fill up on a bunch of nuts. And, I'll have cashews and M&Ms, and early in the day we'll have some pumpkin donuts that I get from a joint downtown. But if you're like me, a donut in the morning just makes you that much hungrier when lunchtime rolls around. So
yeah, and we have appetizers of boiled eggs, deviled eggs.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, we that's usually an Easter thing for us.
Then of course a cold veggie tray. You have to have a veggie tray.
Well, yeah, that
we used to have. That's interesting that you bring that up. Like I said, we've downsized our Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
When I was younger and we had all the families getting together, we used to have the veggie tray. We'd have the German cold cut tray. And if we were over at my Aunt Marlene and Uncle Bob's, that means Tante Emmy and, Uncle Carmine would be coming over, and he was from Sicily. Mm-hmm. So we'd have all those trays, and then we'd have either stuffed shells or lasagna.
Oh, delicious.
And the turkey. And it was an all, like, we'd get there at 8 or 9 in the morning and leave like 7 or 8 at night.
It was like a food decathlon, right?
Oh, yeah. We used to have all of that. But the veggie plate, that's an important thing, especially if, you know, you're having family and friends over.
Yeah.
And the cold cut plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a food orgy.
Yeah, that, yeah, I will say, yes, carrots, celery, radishes, and ranch dip. I make a really, really, really good fresh ranch dip. I don't have measurements. I just eyeball it, but it's like 50-50 sour cream and mayonnaise, maybe 60 sour cream, 40 mayonnaise, and then garlic powder, onion powder, parsley flakes. God, I'm forgetting all my dry spices for my ranch. The garlic powder, the onion powder, and chives. I think that one has chives. Chives, parsley, dill, of course, dill. And you know, just mix that up, some black pepper, whatever that, and yeah, I'll have. And Susan this year, which I love, and it's the first time I've seen them is just recently, is those, the baby carrots that are like all the different colors, like they're red and yellow and orange. I don't know if you've seen those, but,
I grew them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Colored carrot. Yeah.
So yeah,
I know that we could do a garden show maybe next spring.
So that is the closest thing to a salad you'll get from me is the veggie tray. I always forget about that. I don't even really, you know, because everything else is so heavy, it's like that ceases to become anything, you know. you know, it's like, oh, veggie tray. Yeah, that's just like, you know, it's like a garnish. So
I was just gonna say we have 5 or 6 different types of salads. You know, the pasta salad.
That's amazing.
Rice salads, and then of course the lettuce, which is romaine lettuce,
yeah,
and carrots and that kind of stuff in it. But then I have 4, 5, 6 vegetarians.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot. So but Rain, what were you gonna say?
I was just thinking about spices. You're talking about dry spices, and mm-hmm. I know this is late in the podcast. Another really good spice to use when you don't want to use salt is celery seed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love celery seed.
Mm. It's something, I don't know what it is, but it's just it adds a different dimension. But mm-hmm. celery seed is something, if you need salt and you don't want to use salt, try celery seed.
Yeah, that's one of the main spices in Old Bay seasoning.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought it was the tears of Maryland fishermen.
We'll find out from Rob Poole next time we do this. But, yeah, so, well, I'll tell you what, we've done a good run on this. We should probably end where you end Thanksgiving dinner and talk a little bit about desserts.
Can I jump in with one other side dish that we all overlooked?
Oh, yeah, go.
One of the things I like to make, and I've been doing it for like the last several years, is homemade dinner rolls.
Oh, very nice.
Oh, yes.
And,
yeah.
They are so good. I mean, they're the real deal with yeast. And since we've gotten the, the KitchenAid with the dough hook on it, that makes it so much easier than having to knead it on a countertop for 5 minutes. But yeah, they are so good with they have milk and scalded milk and butter in them, so they just taste really buttery even before you put the butter on them.
Wow,
they are outstanding.
Wow, that sounds good. Yeah, we didn't even talk about that. I'm a horrible baker, so I don't even attempt it. So this year, I went and I got a couple nice baguettes that I'm gonna. Cut up for my 2 days of Thanksgiving dinner here. We're doing Thanksgiving on Thursday and Saturday at my house. But yeah, so I got 2 baguettes that I threw in the freezer, and that'll be our bread. But that sounds amazing, Bob. So I will.
I can attest. This is why I let him deal with the yeast products in this house between beer and bread.
That's awesome. That's it, you guys are a good match for that. That's excellent. So wow, that's a good way to wrap up the dinner, but we should talk about dessert a little bit. I will say last year I made a pumpkin pie. It was very good. But I didn't muck around with the pie pumpkin or anything like that. It was just Libby's out of a can, and it was very good. It was very good.
Dillon's have great pies. They charge about $4.99 a pie. That's where we get ours.
That's a local
grocery store.
There you go. So, but I this year my mom will be bringing desserts. I said, you know what? I will probably make a pumpkin pie for Saturday. But when my mom comes up, she's going to bring a pumpkin roll, which I really like. Those are so good. And I said I really didn't want pumpkin pie, and she agreed to make a chocolate silk pie. So we're going very non-traditional, very decadent for our dessert. But Bob, you're the master baker of the show.
I kind of I learned to bake before I learned to cook because I had a sweet tooth, and I had a mother that was very good at baking, so. Every year I always make an apple pie, and one of the things that I do that I know a lot of people don't want to bother with is making the crust from scratch.
Yeah.
But it's essentially it's flour, butter or shortening, a little salt and a little cold water, and that's all there is to it. It's just you have to cut the butter into the flour to just the right amount, so that you'll have a flaky crust. Some people do that in a blender. They just throw all in the blender, and then they add the cold water to get it to stick together. But if you do that, then you'll end up with a very crumbly crust that kind of almost powderized when it cooks. So you don't want to overcut the butter into the flour if you want your crust to be flaky. But I do homemade crusts for the pies, apple pies with Macintosh apples, of course.
Apple pie. It's not just vegetarian.
Well, I can make it vegan. I have made it. My brother's vegan, and I've made it that way before using the white Crisco. And then for sugar, I use the turbinado sugar.
Okay.
Which is the unfiltered sugar. If he's not going to be there, then I prefer to use either butter or the butter flavor Crisco for the crust, and then I use. I'll still use the turbinado sugar because it adds that little bit of molasses adds a nice little touch to the flavor of the pie.
Yeah. So apple pies always for Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving and Christmas usually.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
The thing is, the thing I don't like about making the apple pies is it just seems to take forever to. I mean, even with one of those little things where that cores and sections the apple off into. 8 equal pieces. Mm-hmm. You still have to peel them. You still have to slice them up after that. And that just seems to take forever to get all that done.
See, I don't mind peeling and cutting vegetables. And plus, the Sue's is my sous chef as well. She doesn't mind doing all that stuff too. So what about custard pies? Do you ever do any custard pies like pumpkin or anything like that?
I usually ask him to please make a chocolate pudding pie.
Yes, I've done that before. We've made homemade chocolate pudding, which is not that hard. It's cornstarch and egg yolk and cocoa and milk and sugar.
Oh.
Another one that I like is lemon meringue. I've got my mother's lemon meringue pie recipe from
love that.
Back when I was a little kid, and that's really good too.
Will you ever try a coconut meringue?
That sounds good. I might have to do that this year.
All right, let really me good. Know. I'll make a special trip for that. My favorite pie in the universe is coconut cream pie. So,
I don't generally make pumpkin pies, and the reason is when I was a kid, I liked them until I started having other pies, and now just pumpkin pie is just not one of my favorites, and I don't think it's one of Rain's favorites. So, yeah. I mean, why should we make it? If it's not something we're really going to eat.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that sort of dropped off the tradition list. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bob's mom passed away a year and a half ago, and we still have her recipe, but it's not something if it's just it's one of those things that just seems like, okay, I've reached pumpkin pie spice overload.
overdose. Years ago. Yeah, not to mention, you go through, you know, all the pumpkin beers and pumpkin lattes and all that stuff by the time Thanksgiving rolls around. I don't want to see anything that has pumpkin in it.
Nonsense. Yes. I pumpkin spice everything. No, I don't want to. Pumpkin spice but, Doritos. Yeah.
But, yeah, I like Bob's pies. He does have a good crust. I mean, we use the same crust, like, for chicken pot pie at this point. And after Thanksgiving, we'll use that for turkey pot pie.
That's great. So, let me just ask you, what is your key? How do you know that you folded the butter into the flour? Is it just eyeballing and knowing what that looks like? Or is there...
My mother had a trick. She did it with two knives, and I never learned how to do that. Mm-hmm. So I do it with kind of squeeze it between my fingers, you know, just run it through until I don't find any more big chunks of butter, and then I stop.
Okay.
So if you did it in the blender, it would have gone way beyond that. And I have tried doing it in the blender, and I was really not happy with the results, so I don't do that anymore.
Okay. All right. I probably would use one of those little hand tools. I don't know what the heck you call them, but I have one. The
dough cutters.
Dough cutters.
Okay.
Dough cutters?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Semicircle.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing with those, I think, is that they just seem to get clogged up really easily.
They do.
Which is just aggravating as hell.
Yeah.
And I think it probably leaves the butter just a little too big of chunks.
Okay.
Because if it's too big, then the butter will melt while it's baking and everything, kind of make it, you know, like greasy spots and then dry spots.
Interesting. So you just do it by hand. I dig it. I might have to do that. So all right. Well, it looks like we the special has gone on a little bit longer than planned, but it's okay because We got to cover all the bases, I think, for what we find to be a successful Thanksgiving dinner. Some good ideas for prep work, some good ideas for your shopping, and, you know, a few safety tips here and there. Yeah. So, Rain, you're not going to rinse your turkey this year.
I will not.
Do not spray the salmonella everywhere. Because again,
I hadn't thought about it like that. So that was something really interesting.
Yeah. So,
one other thing is for your turkey, not just having a good oven, you know, making sure that your oven is calibrated,
mm-hmm.
make sure, I mean, if you get one of those pop-up timers, I don't trust them.
I rip them out.
Get a good meat thermometer.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Get a good meat thermometer. I have one. Fortunately, my father-in-law bought this for me many moons ago, and it works great. But it's one that you use for the grill. It's actually like a fork, like a meat fork, and it's got a digital display on it, and it's never failed me. And it even has little pictures, whether it's, you know, poultry or beef or pork, you know, and it tells you whether it's well done or raw or whatever. But it also gives you the actual temperature readout. So I just stick that in the thickest part, down by the leg, and it gives a good readout. But yeah, invest in a good thermometer. You definitely don't want to get poisoned. That's always a good goal to shoot for around the holidays.
Most important thing I think is just try not to stress. Remember, this is supposed to be a time for giving thanks and to enjoy your family and friends.
Yeah,
exactly.
And just revel in the fun of it, because that, for me, fortunately, I don't have family members who are going to come over and scream and fight about, you know, politics or religion or sports. So, it's always a very chill day for me, but I still like to maximize my time with my family. So all this stuff, like making whatever you can the night before, like I said, I'm going to be making stuffing in the foundation of my gravy the night before. And then that resting time, that all important resting time for the turkey to get all your sides done in a very casual fashion. You know, if you follow those, you know, that kind of formula to, you know, or that time frame to get the dinner done, you know, there should be no stress. And if you're like me, I'm kind of a control freak when it comes to, you know, Thanksgiving dinner. If you don't want people in the kitchen saying, how can I help? Just, you know, you tell them to open a bottle of wine, tell them to set the table, do things like that, you know, and usually, you know, they'll do a little job and then be gone. So,
well, and I think the fun part of holidays too are your screw ups. You know, then you can laugh, and somebody else say, oh, "Here, let me finish that." Or,
oh yeah,
you know, and then you laugh about it every year for a while. You know, it's just Thanksgiving to me is just getting together with family. The same with Christmas.
Absolutely, that and that is the most important thing to remember. So. So, all right.
That's why, you know, we said we opened up our door this year. We may have dinner with some of our neighbors. Last year we have friends and her husband was in the military. She's got two very rambunctious children.
Uh-huh.
And so what we talked to them about is, I said, hey, how about I cook a turkey? You cook the side dishes. We bring the turkey over to your house. And, it was fun.
That's great.
It was really fun. I mean, it's a time for giving thanks. And I felt like I didn't do it because I felt like I had an honor. She is a friend of mine. But it felt good knowing that this woman whose husband was over in Iraq, you know, we could help her out.
Yes.
And we could all have a nice Thanksgiving. The idea is about giving thanks.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's easy to lose that focus, especially in these
trying times, yes. And that's another thing too we didn't even touch on is the idea of a potluck, where, you know, somebody else, you know, if that's another thing. If you're planning a full meal and people ask what they can bring, and you don't want them to bring stuff, well, like this time around, dessert, you know, you really can't have too many desserts, you know, because more variety the better. People aren't insulted if you say, oh, I want chocolate pie instead of, you know, apple pie or whatever. You know, it's not like you have to fill your plate with every kind of dessert. People get it. You've been through a lot already, you know. You know, so, you know, you can have people bring wine, bring soda, maybe potato chips or something like that. Again, if you want some light snacks, you know, so there are things that if you don't want your, you know, because I'll tell you something. I had a party recently, and I had it mapped out, you know, my Halloween party. And I told people don't bring food. But apparently, people still wanted to bring food. And it completely threw a monkey wrench in, like, how much room I had for what I already made for people. And the display and, you know, the continuity of the food that I had. So it was, you know, so you know... Don't be that person.
I always tell everybody, bring your own bottle, whatever kind that is. I'm not going to mess with the drinks.
Sure.
That's on you.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. You know, beverages is a great way. You know, some minor snacks, nothing major. You don't want people bringing whole cheese plates. You know, the cheese on Thanksgiving is just to me... No cheese on Thanksgiving unless there's a little bit in a recipe. Like I said, my green bean casserole cups. No cheese platters. There's too much heaviness going on. And last but not least, I'm sorry to get kind of got off track there. But Rain, you know, you talked about taking a turkey where somebody else makes the sides. You know, hopefully if one thing you know could help people on today's on this special is that if somebody is going to a potluck. Look at how many ideas, wonderful ideas, that they have to choose from for a side dish to take.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I got ideas for our dinner.
I did, too. I'm making those carrots, maybe for Christmas, but not you know, Thanksgiving. But, yeah, I'm going to go back because I can't remember everything right now because we talked about so much. And, I'm going to try the peppers and the stuffing, too. I've never done that. So, and that sage sausage stuffing. Holy smokes. Look at all this
stuff.
That
sounds great.
Yeah. So, we're...
That goes just roasted... I love that stuff.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give time for everybody to mention any last thing they want. But if you want more information on any of the dishes we talked about, you can... find us all on Facebook or at Indie Media Weekly, you know, to track us down. Of course, I'm Kenny Pick on Facebook. Pretty easy guy to find. If you're not friends with Janet, Bob, or Rain, I will. You can just message me, and I'll get you the information you need for any recipe. And, and of course, go to Indie Media Weekly on Facebook and all of our respective shows have their sites too. Turn Up the Night with Kenny Pick, Southern Progressive Revival, and yeah, and this has been a lot of fun, guys.
This is great.
So
who wants to go first?
Yeah, who? Any last thoughts today, Janet?
I would just say that remember that today is, or the holidays, or any time really, is about family. And family is whoever you're with. Whether they don't have to be blood. If you're enjoying them and you're breaking bread with them, they're family.
Indeed.
So enjoy.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. Okay, Bob, what do you got for everybody?
I was going to, you mentioned drinks really quickly, which is right up my alley. And I was just going to say, as a suggestion, if you've never had a dry, still, hard cider, that's a really good, alternative to wine.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a little less alcohol. That little bit of apple cider goes really well with the typical dishes that you have at Thanksgiving.
Oh yeah.
And I'm not talking about like the English like cider that tastes like, sugar water with some apple flavoring in it. I'm talking about like really good. Sometimes French ciders you'll find them, but if you can find a good dry cider, it's a good beverage to have with your Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, perfect for a perfect fall beverage, really. So very good. Are there any brands or any places maybe to find that? So maybe a world market type place or something?
Yeah, I would say you probably have to go to a place that, like the warehouse package store type of places. You're not going to find it probably at your local small boutique wine shop because they're not that common. Mm-hmm. Then they don't get distributed that widely. So there's probably going to be one from a cidery that's in your state or nearby, and those are, it's always good to support the local businesses anyway.
Oh, just so you know, when Bob says package store, a lot of people, I did not know what a package store was until it was described on Sam Cedar's show a few years ago. But a package store, it's basically a liquor store. So, it's a unique name, but that's like a New Jersey kind of thing, isn't it?
I don't know. They call them package stores in Atlanta. I don't remember what we call them up in Rochester.
Oh, okay. All right. So cool. So yeah, that's it's kind of a maybe they're going to just start calling them all package stores everywhere from now on. I dig it. I like it. It sounds better than liquor store.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a little classier. Come on. And Rain, all right, go ahead and wrap things up for us.
I just want to build upon what Janet said, and of course the cider thing. But most of all, I want to give thanks to the people that listen to the shows on Indie Media Weekly. I want to send my love and happiness to you on Thanksgiving. And I'm very, very thankful and grateful for all of you that are listening to this show today. So go eat, be merry, and if your crazy uncle starts talking about things you don't want him to talk about, give him some whiskey.
Yeah.
With a little Benadryl.
I'll just give him extra whiskey. Let's not.
Well, the Benadryl is there in case he becomes a mean drunk.
True.
Then he'll just go to sleep.
True. So
I'm an evil person.
It's all right. Just feed him whiskey and extra turkey, and the tryptophan should take care of it. So,
but happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yes, thank you everybody for listening, and thank you, Rain, Bob, Janet, for participating. This is again the dream podcast for me to talk turkey and sides here on Indie Media Weekly. So, all right, but yeah, happy Thanksgiving to all of you from all of us, and we're going to have to do this again sometime. It was fun.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having me.
All right.
Thank you for letting me be had.